Welcome to The Vinyl Preacher, your weekly podcast where we talk about the Bible and make a playlist. I'm Matt Cadle, pastor at St. Mark's Lutheran Church in Los Angeles, California, currently working remotely from the village of Arlington Heights, Illinois.
Matt, it looks like I've always made sure to call it the village of Arlington Heights. It's never evoked village to me when I've thought of it, you know, when I've driven past or flown over it at the airport. But looking at you today with your wood panels, there's wood paneling, there is evergreen festiveness. Out the window, I can only see some a forest, I assume. It looks like you are in the recording studio with Bon Iver.
It's true, yeah. I do actually, you can't see it here, there's a bonsai tree right next to me. It's a whole, it's something else here in the village. Yeah.
Mm. I'm Zach Paris. I'm the pastor of Lutheran Campus Ministry at the University of Colorado, Boulder, coming to you live from my basement.
Oh, it's good to see your basement. Your Christmas tree, got the little gifts there.
I haven't talked about it yet on the podcast, Matt, but you can see it. Our listeners cannot see it because this is an audio medium. But I got it back. I got my console stereo back from Dr. Dan down in Littleton, Colorado. And Matt, it's fantastic.
Is right? it?
It's fantastic. It was a little pricier than I wanted it to be, right? But it's also one of those things where, like, I'm not going to go down there and be like, nah, thanks. No thanks. It wasn't that expensive, you know, like, to get out of that kind of a deal. It's really got to be over your head. But Dr. Dan loved it. He was very excited to show me his. He was like super proud of this work, which is really fun, right? I mean, that's kind of what the podcast is about. Like, it's really exciting to talk to people who get really excited about things. And he was so excited about what he did. Replaced all of the capacitors, put in new tubes because there's tubes in there, and like put a new wheel in on the turntable, and it sounds incredible.
That's awesome.
And the new tubes and stuff warm up much quicker. The old tubes, like, I needed to know, Matt, you know this about me, for the past 10 to 15 years, my family has taken a more of a slow food approach to food. So I've not had a microwave in 10 to 15 years. And the biggest adjustment was you had to plan ahead, right? Like, you got to predict, I'm going to be hungry in 30 minutes. I had to take that same approach to vinyl. I'd be like, I think I'm going to want to hear a record in about 30 minutes. So let's warm that baby up, and then it would be ready to go. Now, I mean, 2 minutes maybe, and it's ready to go. It's fantastic. Fidelity is beautiful. Lovely. Lovely, man.
Amazing. Amazing.
All the mechanisms on the turntable work now. So, like, you can put it on. I don't know why they, like, I don't know why with old record players they did this, you know, because it seems like unnecessary mechanization, but you kind of put the record on the top of the needle and you put that arm on it and then you press on and it will, like, drop it down for you so you don't have to, like, drop it all the way down because that'd be way too much work. And then it puts the needle on for you. You don't have to worry yourself with the needle. It'll take it off.
Wow.
I'm really excited. And it turns on and off now, which is not a feature it previously had. You had to plug it in and unplug it every time. So I'm really excited. If you, dear listener, need to spend a lot of money on restoring ancient audio, Dr. Dan is your man in Littleton.
Amazing. Amazing. That's an awesome story. And I love that he's so excited about it. That just, that's right? Awesome. Fantastic. I went a different route with my vinyl record player. Ordered a new one. Had to be handmade. I think it's waiting for me back in L.A. So we'll see. We'll get a report on that in the new year.
You could write a song about that.
I also have to plan ahead if I want to listen to vinyl because I ordered this Killers record back in August. And I just got an email today that it shipped. It finally shipped here in December. So if you want to hear the new Killers album, you got to order it 4 months in advance.
I do like that now it's in the shipping system, which is currently being overwhelmed by millions and millions of vials of vaccines. So it's going to be delayed again, Matt. I just want you to know that. It's not like the government is putting these on military planes or using FedEx. So another delay.
Well, no vinyl records here, although I did discover one downstairs in my parents' basement. They had an original copy of the single The Super Bowl Shuffle.
Oh, from
the 1985 Bears. The case is the like cardboard sleeve is a little worse for wear, but it looks like the record's still good. So
dang.
I'm going to take this one home and yeah.
I bet you could make some cash on eBay with that.
Priceless.
Featuring, of course, Clemson University football legend William the Refrigerator Perry.
Oh my gosh, he went to Clemson?
Yeah, he did.
So we were getting ready. My nephews and I were getting ready to watch The Mandalorian the other night, and we're scrolling through Disney Plus looking for it, and there's some new movie which apparently takes place at Clemson. And so we watched the trailer for this movie, and they said my nephew said, what's it, Howard's Rock or something? He said, what's that? And I said, I don't know, but I could phone a friend. I don't know.
Yeah.
You got a take on this movie?
Do I have a take on this movie? So I was partially there when the situation.
Yeah?
Safety is the Disney movie.
Who plays you in the movie?
I don't know that I get played. I've got 2 degrees of separation to Ray Ray, who is the lead character. Ray Ray McRathelby was a Clemson football player and came from a really bad situation, I believe somewhere in Atlanta. And he had a younger brother, and while he's playing football at Clemson, he decides that the best thing for him to do is to adopt his brother, his younger brother. And so his younger brother moves in with him at Clemson. Hannah, my wife, her roommate, Stacy, one of the things that through our church connections, one of the folks who was a member of the church where he went was involved with Vickery Hall, which was the student athlete academic success center. So lots of us, myself included, worked like part-time jobs there. So I was a student athlete mentor. So there were 3 football players who I met with 3 times a week to do some tutoring, but mostly just to like be their mom. you know, to be like, hey, you're on top of things? Like, what's your homework situation? You got exams, that kind of stuff. And Stacy, Hannah's roommate, was in one of those kinds of relationships with Ray Ray before this all happened. I think this actually, like, the movie takes place after I graduated, but Ray Ray was around. So Stacy knew Ray Ray. I've not seen the movie. Because I feel conflicted about it. In the same way that I feel conflicted about college football, I love college football, Matt, and I want to be very clear in saying that I love college football. And when I say that, it is not to say that I like it so much more than you can imagine, right? I love college football. I do not like college football. I cannot help but to love it, right? Like, that's just a thing, right? Which means that I'm also aware of the grossness of it. And so a Disney inspirational movie as lipstick on the pig of college football.
Wow. Hot
take.
I love
college football, and it rarely ever should leave you with a feel-good emotions. Ray Ray does get a lot of support and stuff, but then it actually ends kind of messily, and I imagine they don't get into that in the movie, that he ends up transferring, and it seems like they've mended fences almost 10 years later now, but or probably more than 10 years later now.
Yeah.
So that's my take on the movie. Howard's Rock, of course.
Of course.
Is a rock, which was the original question. I've got a model of it somewhere.
You do not.
I have it far out of reach of my child. Of course I do. It's a sacred object. The stadium where Clemson plays football is called Death Valley. That's a nickname given to it in 1942 by the coach of the Presbyterian College, Blue Hose, who, before taking his team down to Clemson, told the press, it's like taking his team down to Death Valley. And so the name stuck. It predates any mention in the press of Louisiana State University calling their stadium Death Valley, which emerges from a mispronunciation of Death Valley. Regardless, in 1952, S.C. Jones, an alumnus of Clemson University, traveled to Death Valley, California, made the connection, picked up a rock, and took it back with him to Clemson, South Carolina. He took it into the coach's office, to Frank Howard's office. Frank Howard was the coach for like 30 years. I do have some hats and football signed by Frank, because Frank was, he is deceased now. He died back when I was in like middle school. But before that, after he retired, he kept an office in the in the football building, and he would just sit in his office before football games. And so multiple times you could just stop by and talk to Frank. And so my dad would bring me in and we would talk to Frank Howard and get his autograph and stuff. That was a big part. Like, I mean, we did it 3 or 4 or 5 times that I can remember. So SC Jones takes this rock and he gives it to Coach Howard in his office. And Coach Howard's like, oh, thank you. This is great. And he used it as a doorstop for a while. And then he got tired of it. And he told the coach to get rid of that rock for me. And the coach did not get rid of the rock. The assistant took the rock, put it on a concrete pedestal at the top of a hill because the locker rooms were not in the stadium. And you had to like walk from the locker rooms down this hill into the stadium, which is how the football team now runs down the hill. And so that day, the first game they played after the rock had been put on the pedestal, Clemson came back from, I think, 29-7 to defeat Virginia. And the legend of the rock was born. And the quote that is attributed to Coach Howard's rock, is that if you're not going to give me 110%, you can keep your filthy hands off my rock. And so the rock has an important place.
Oh, my gosh. It was a mystical
object that was vandalized. You used to be able just to walk up and rub it, like to keep the gates of the stadium open. And about 10 years ago, someone came with a pickaxe and not chipped off a big piece. And so now they have an insane amount of security around it. Bulletproof glass and 24/7 security cameras.
That's incredible. That's quite just so y'all know, Dak did not like prepare that whole thing in advance. That's a monologue, like just from the heart right there. You know how they talk about speaking from the heart when you're trying to preach? That's just, wow, incredible. I'm going to have you like record that for my next.
Water
just
comes
so much.
Forth from it when you strike it with a staff. The beginning of the game, Dabo takes a staff a la Moses and strikes it.
And it has a California connection. It's really from Death Valley. That's incredible. Right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Well, well.
There's a long answer to that question, man.
On that note. Wow. Yeah. Well, I hope that you learned a lot, dear listeners, because that's why you tune in to this podcast.
College football lore. Civil.
College football.
Secular religious symbols.
Incredible. I cannot wait to tell my nephew Cooper all of that stuff, or maybe just play this for him.
That could work too.
Well, it's Christmas, Zach. Christmas. Yeah, so trying to figure out how to frame Christmas this year. So I missed the podcast last week dealing with a death in my family. And as I was doing that, you know, also just realizing that we are in a time of death, so much death all around us, right? And the headlines right now are just the numbers of people that have died from COVID. And then one of the things that we're realizing too is that it isn't just folks that are dying from COVID, but the impact that COVID has on our regular rituals around death and our practices around death and how that just impacts just everything in so many ways. And so it feels like this feels like a Christmas under grief and what that looks like. I mean, I'll be honest, I started this year, this COVID tide, excited about all the innovation of like, what can we do? Like, we can do video stuff and like, we can do virtual stuff. And like, what can we like, just trying to like, this is a challenge. Okay. You're going to issue me a challenge for how to do this stuff. let's figure this, right? Let's figure this out. And I do think there's been some innovation along the way this year. We've definitely learned some things in this great revelation, but there's no getting around the fact that it is a year of grief for so many. And I imagine that each of us has folks in our communities that face some of this year. And I was thinking about this and I was like, you know, I've seen some of the blue Christmas services and maybe I'll check one out this year because it seems like that could be meaningful. But I also wonder about like, regular Christmas, right? Like, does regular Christmas itself speak to this time and this moment? So I wonder if it's an interesting way to frame Christmas this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it, man.
Let's see what these texts have to say.
Let's see.
We also learned that the texts are different for different traditions. So we're going to look this week, I think, at Christmas Eve and the first Sunday of Christmas, and we'll put those together. So we'll just talk about both of them, because we only do one podcast a week. You can't ask more of us than that. But we had a little back and forth, Zach, about what text we're going to use.
We did. As our listeners know, I personally use a website called lectionarypage.net. Because if it says .net, you can trust it. Man, it's not fake news. And if it has web page in the title, in the URL, that means it's good. And it's an Episcopal-based resource, and so I was prepared for the text, and I noticed it was John 1 for December 27th, and we texted back and forth, and you said, are we doing Christmas 1 and Christmas Eve? And I was like, yeah, that's Luke 2 and John 1, right? And you were like, yeah, it's like all Luke 2. And I was like, is it? And then I did.
Well, and I thought you meant Luke 1 because I think it's an option for Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. Usually.
Yeah, you could do John 1.
So I was like, okay, but you were talking about Sunday after Christmas.
I was talking about Sunday after Christmas. So then I was like, is Matt? Oh, I know he's on the road here. He's playing an away game. Did he leave his lectionary calendar at home and is confused here? So I went to the ELCA's official lectionary PDF that you can download. And Matt was right. The ELCA is on Luke 2 for December 27th and not John 1. And so then I was curious, right? Where is the error here? And so, Matt, I grabbed my Book of Common Prayer that I have right here.
We
will open it up.
You know, we would have called Kevin Strickland to find out the answer, but directly. Sadly, he won't take our calls. So you had to find out another way. You had to go home by another way. And what did you find?
I found that on Christmas Day 1, Year B, it's Luke 2, Matt. It's Luke 2.
Really?
Yeah.
In the Book of Common Prayer?
In the Book of Common Prayer that I have. But here's the thing. This Book of Common Prayer was published in 1986. And wow. The RCL was not fully adopted by the Episcopal Church until 2006. And in resources that I found online, I found a PDF of the Book of Common Prayer. They switched to John 1 in 2006. It is a variation of the revised Common Prayer lectionary. I tried to find, dear listener, if you can find it, that'd be the very nerdy thing for you to find, but I would like to find a resource that lists all of the different churches, like, variations, because adopting the Revised Common Lectionary, most churches do not adopt it in total, but have a number of small variations here or there, and we stumbled upon one.
So, wow. This is super nerdy inside baseball, but pretty interesting. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. Like, I wonder what the reasoning is. I mean, it's good. Like, John 1 is really good. I like it. We often use it in addition to Luke 2 on Christmas Eve. It's good. And, like, you know, the trouble with the Sunday for Christmas is, like, I had to make sure I was right too, because I never preached this Sunday. I'm always traveling, right?
Tim and I,
so it is like a weird
talk about, you know, what it's like to always preach the Sunday after Christmas and after Easter.
Yeah.
Now that he's joined my world as a traveling preacher.
So yeah, like, I could see why you would just we'll just use the same text every year. But on the other hand, I also recall, like, one of the reasons I'm a little bit sad not to preach, because it changes, like, so this is, we get the continuation of the Luke story this year. I think in another year, and I'm working from memory here, but I think we get, like, the story from Matthew, with the massacre of the innocents, right, where all the children are killed, and then I can't remember what the third year is, but it's like a different, I think it's a different, like, continuation of the story each year. Did you find what the third one is? I can't remember.
It is, according to the Episcopal Church, you get options. It's the same every year. I mean, that's the thing too about John 1 for Sunday after Christmas. It's actually A, B, and C every Sunday, every year you're supposed to do that. And then second Sunday has three different reasons you get to choose from. Matthew 2, the back end, the very end of Luke, or Matthew 2, the beginning.
Now I'm trying to find it. Let's see. Oh, yeah. So then year C is, it's a continuation of the continuation of Luke 2, 41 to 52. Mm-hmm. So it's little Jesus not listening to his parents and getting lost.
What a jerk.
In that whole story, right?
Can
I mean,
relate.
The thing is, like, these are really good, important stories about, like, Jesus' childhood that we don't get anywhere else in the mm-hmm. lectionary that I'm aware of, other than, like, this one you might get for Presentation of Our Lord if you want to use that as an option. But again, like, it gives you a little bit more story. If you want narrative and your narrative lectionary, you can get it from the RCL here on the first Sunday of Christmas.
Oh, man.
So anyway, now that we went down that rabbit hole.
That was helpful for everybody.
Incredible. Well, what are we looking at? Isaiah.
It's a pretty good one.
Isaiah 9, verses 2 to 7. This is for Christmas Eve.
For Christmas Eve.
The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who lived in a land of deep darkness, on them a light has shined. You have multiplied the nation. You have increased its joy. They rejoice before you as with joy at the harvest, as people exult when dividing plunder, for the yoke of their burden and the bar across their shoulders.
My first plunder party.
Yep, absolutely. For the yoke of their burden and the bar across their shoulders, the rod of their oppressor, you have broken as on the day of Midian. For all the boots of the trampling warriors and all the garments rolled in blood shall be burned as fuel for the fire. For a child has been born for us, a son given to us. Authority rests upon his shoulders, and he is named Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. His authority shall grow continually, and there shall be endless peace. For the throne of David and his kingdom, he will establish and uphold it with justice and with righteousness from this time onward and forevermore. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will do this. Word of God, word of life.
Thanks be to God.
So this is pretty militaristic. So that's
it is.
That's fun. So fun fact: the funeral that that I was at last week, the opening song that we did was the Battle Hymn of the Republic.
Yeah,
and it was great. It was totally my idea because we were talking. So my dad was really into the Civil War. Right.
Yeah.
And somehow I thought, you know, they were talking about Harper's Ferry. He went one time to visit and I was like, yeah, John Brown. And remember that tune, John Brown's Body? It's Battle Hymn of the Republic. And then I was like, oh my God, we could sing Battle Hymn of the Republic. And so, the pastor had to tell me, he was like, well, I can't put the words on the screen to that one. Cause we don't sing that one very often. So I don't have it ready, but, it's really good.
Yeah.
You know, like it's pretty, like it's very, it's got a great tune. You can sing along to the chorus. Everybody can sing along to the chorus. And, incredible lyrics. My church, St. Mark's actually, my music director loves it. And so we do it at least once a year for some reason. Like we'll do it for like 4th of July or something. Like it's pretty great, but it's really, it has a liberationist, bent to it as well. Cause it is like a Civil War song and it's written, it was actually written by, now I can't remember her name, but she wrote the Mother's Day proclamation as well. So sometimes we'll do it like for Mother's Day, which is, ridiculous. But this is, anyway, I bring this up because here is this text from Isaiah, which, feels militaristic, which can feel, pretty uncomfortable to us. And yet it is nuts that like, this is the thing that's happening with the birth of this child. Is this the kind of thing that you sent out with your birth announcements, Zach? Did you do like, was that the song that you were playing, when you brought Zelda home? Did you play Battle Hymn of the Republic? I mean, man, is that really the Christmas soundtrack here? Why? I mean, what do you do with this?
You know, Matt, the Battle Hymn of the Republic is attuned to one of the fight songs for the University of Colorado.
Really?
Glory, glory, Colorado. land of the silver and gold.
That's incredible.
Wow. As the University of Georgia uses it as well. Glory, glory to all Georgia. I think, you know, normally, Matt, on this podcast, and as a personal preacher, my personal preaching perspective would be to not revel or bask in military metaphor. But this year is not a normal year. And one of the ways that I've made sense of my experience, right, is to make some comparisons to how I have heard of wartime in the past, you know, the sort of World War II, sort of like, I am not a frontline worker or responder or really an essential worker, but I have a duty and burden that we've got to trudge through, and we don't know how long it's going to last. So I think the military images might resonate a bit more and be more not so over the top this year than other years, because I feel it, right? That yoke of their burden, the bar across their shoulders. In most years, I'd probably have to do some work coming up with metaphor for what that's talking about. But I don't feel like this year I need too much of it. I feel like I've got a yoke of burden. I'm pretty aware of the rod of the oppressor daily, you know. So I think there's some room to get into that without being too triumphant.
Yeah. Yeah, and to be really clear about what we're waging war. I mean, it reminds me of, like, I mean, this is a time of great division. I'm here in the suburbs of Chicago, and let me tell you, there are lawn signs. Even though the elections are over, there are lawn signs everywhere. Some saying reopen our schools. It's a whole thing. My brother and sister-in-law are teachers, and it's a whole thing. You could feel that in LA. It's like, no, like, we're not. Oh, that's insane. Why would we do this? But here it's a real debate. There's real division. And I think, you know, to be clear about, like, we're not trying to, it isn't about declaring war on one another. It reminds me of the Dr. King metaphor, the drum major, right? What are you a drum major for? And he says, call me a drum major for justice, a drum major for peace. And so, you know, to consider what this child is going to wage war on, right? Not killing for killing's sake or victory for victory's sake, to say that your team is the best or something, but about liberating the people of God from all that oppresses.
I mean, I think that garment's rolled in blood. You know, there.
Yeah.
Who was I? I was listening to NPR, sometimes listen to KCRW, so I can't remember if it was Governor Newsom or Polis, who just had to order a bunch of new body bags, right? Or down in Pueblo, where they've got the refrigerated truck showing up. Well, there are plenty of garments rolled in blood that are not the result of a military struggle here.
Yeah. And all the garments rolled in blood shall be burned as fuel for the fire.
It's a text, Matt.
It's a text. So that's the setup. Here's the framing. Should we move to the gospel?
Let us.
I mean, here's this gospel text, and it begins with I mean, you've got this military imagery in Isaiah, and then it begins with a decree going out from an emperor. So, yeah, you want to read it for us?
In those days, a decree went out from Emperor Augustus that all the world should be registered. This was the first registration. It was taken while Quirinius was governor of Syria. And all went to their own towns to be registered. Joseph also went from the town of Nazareth, way up in Galilee, down south to Judea, to the city of David called Bethlehem, because he was descended from the house and family of David. And he went there to be registered with Mary, to whom he was engaged and who was expecting a child. And while they were there, the time came for her to deliver her child. And she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in bands of cloth and laid him in a manger, because there was no place for them at the inn. And in that region there were shepherds living in the fields, keeping watch over their flock by night. And then an angel of the Lord stood before them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were terrified. But the angel said to them, Do not be afraid, for see, I am bringing you good news of great joy for all people. To you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, who is the Messiah, the Lord. And this will be a sign for you. You will find a child wrapped in bands of cloth and lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of heavenly hosts praising God and saying, glory to God in the highest heaven, and on earth peace among those whom he favors. The Gospel of the Lord.
The Gospel of the Lord, that's where it ends?
That's where it ends. There is, you can add on.
Incredible.
If you'd like. But that's where the reading ends, and it's probably enough reading for people. Well, no, never mind. I was about to give my standard Christmas Eve advice, you know, which is like, people don't come on Christmas Eve to hear the sermon. They've got other things they're trying to get out the door. That's not true. None of it's true this year. All of your wisdom. If people are watching your video on the internet, then maybe they are there for the sermon. Who knows? They don't have anything else to do. So go long. Read the whole thing. Who cares?
Incredible. Oh. Incredible.
So my traditional take on this story that I think still works this year has, you're not going to believe it, a fun social science fact. And that is, in the census, Jesus was not counted because infant mortality was at such a high rate that you did not count babies or newborns in the census because it is unlikely that they would survive to adulthood. So let's wait to count them until then. Babies, you know, we have lived, Matt, in this time where, like, we've romanticized childhood. Children are good, fun things, right? We don't send them to work in coal mines at 8 years old anymore. Though, in the midst, 9-10 months deep in pandemic, I see the benefit of having your kid out of the house. but that's not the way things always were, right? Children were not always thought of so positively. And so it's important to put that context into place that Jesus was not important enough to be counted even in the census. And so that good news that gets echoed if you keep reading about the shepherds in the fields who are the first ones to hear about this is that the one whom the Roman Empire could not be bothered to count is the one who counts the most. And so that is my traditional Christmas Eve good news.
Amen. That's good. That's a good go-to. That is definitely a good go-to. I think, and you can carry that through this story in so many ways, right? That the, you know, then even with the shepherds, you know, the ones that God works through at Christmas, mm-hmm. just flips everything upside down. I think my go-to at Christmas started when I was on internship, and I preached a sermon that I still think this says what I believe so much about Christmas. So you said infants have such a high mortality rate, and I thought we all have a high mortality rate eventually. Right. I feel like this year that's been brought home to me just so powerfully that, like, this is all so... I mean, it just sounds so trite. You're going to laugh at me, but this is also temporary, right? Like, it just feels like dust through your hands this time. And yet, like, this is the world into which God comes. God enters into that dust that just slips through our fingers, and that's where God comes into. And so the sermon that I preached probably about 10 years ago now is that I use this Annie Dillard piece of prose where she talks about the day that she went for a walk and she saw the tree with the lights in it. And really what she meant was that, you know, she had one of these moments where she suddenly saw creation just charged with the grandeur of God, like just one of these moments where it just felt like everything was holy and shining around her. She saw, and she says, the tree with the lights in it, which of course fits Christmas so much. But I think that that's part of what happens here. It's like that, you know, suddenly here are these shepherds, you know, out in these fields, and suddenly the world is charged with the grandeur of God. Suddenly, you know, the eternal is in the midst of it. And of course, you know, God is always God is always in the midst of this. God sustains creation, but suddenly they were aware of it in a way that had never been before. And I think that that is part of what Christmas does as well, that it sanctifies each one of these moments, no matter how temporary they are. And I think that's worth lifting up as well.
Yeah. Yeah, Matt. I think...
Too much. I'm in a very Ecclesiastes moment, I think. Yeah. You know, coming from this, like, this is all dust. Like, what does this mean? Like, all this time. And yet I do think, like, that's part of Christmas, is that suddenly, like, the eternal shows up in the dust. The dust. So still thinking through what that means, but I think that I could preach on Christmas as well, that in the midst of this these garments rolled in blood, in the midst of everything that we're in the midst of, this is where the eternal shows up.
Yeah, man. Yeah. This is good radio.
I mean an infant with high mortality rate, like you know, there are other folks that could speak more more personally to that reality, but you know, an infant that lives a very short time, does that life, I mean, this is where God shows up, right? Even in that, even in a life that has that doesn't last long, if we're talking about infants with a high mortality rate. I mean, there's also, like, and that shows up in this story, right, with the Massacre of the Innocents, that somehow God sanctifies each one of those lives as well. Each one of these, just, yeah. I don't know. Does that preach?
Yeah. I'm thinking of two things, two stories.
Stitch it together for me.
One is the birth of my child, that I got to witness, and this is some pretty well trod territory, right? But that mm-hmm. birthing a human is not exactly appropriate for a children's Christmas fashion. It's superhuman in a lot of ways, very human and suprahuman. But very visceral. When my child was born, they were born, you know, they did all the things that you, like, would see in a movie from the child being born, and it's a warm, fuzzy moment. But then they realized that she wasn't breathing. And so she got moved to this crash cart immediately, and there were nurses and doctors, medical professionals everywhere doing stuff. And they don't stop to tell you what they're doing when they're trying to save your child's right. life. And so I was stuck in this, like, super intense, bizarre moment that lasted forever, because my wife was in a bed watching me watch what was happening. And so I was, on one hand, just trying to understand what's happening, but then also, like, just super, right, intense. Hashtag buzzword, such a liminal space, that as much as we celebrate babies and being born and birthdays and all that kind of stuff, it's this moment where the line between life and death is really thin, and superhuman. And the promise that's where God is most revealed is helpful. The second one is the second thing I'm thinking of is comes from a baby shower that we had for our daughter, baby showers are interesting and fun. One of our friends is a former world champion at track and field. She is very talented, incredible person. And she was at one of the baby showers, and she gave us a gift, and she was working to make booties for our daughter. And she ran out of time, and she gave us one booty for our daughter. and I just like that image, right, of this world champion. trying to bring, maybe this is a little epiphany-ish, right? Trying to bring a gift for our daughter. And we still have it somewhere, you know? We have a single booty from Jenny Simpson. And that just feels like that's super appropriate for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think, you know, like you said, it's a well-trod territory, but that's exactly what Christmas is, right? There's a reason we come back to it every year. So keep treading it. Well, we move through Christmas Eve into the Sunday after Christmas. Obviously, one of the biggest Sundays of the year. Everyone will best be tuning in. Although, again... Again, this year, got nothing else to do, so let's go to church.
It's the third day of Christmas. What's the gift for that day this year?
I don't know.
On the first day, what took it to me? Three. It's two turtle doves.
Oh, is it?
It's two turtle doves and a partridge in a pear tree. But what's three?
The two turtle doves show up in this story from Luke.
Oh, sick.
Well, what should we do? Let's continue with Luke, and then do you want to do John as well?
Sure.
Okay, so the Luke story continues. The shepherds, long story short, go home, and then we just keep going. When the time came for their purification, according to the law of Moses, Joseph and Mary brought Jesus up to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord. As it is written in the law of the Lord, every firstborn male should be designated as holy to the Lord. Just the firstborn male. So we're good. We're good.
Revise that statute.
Every firstborn male gets a podcast. It'll be good. And they offered a sacrifice according to
what
is stated in the law.
This podcast. Firstborn male podcast.
Whose name? Ah,
it's
love
a t-shirt
Lord.
Idea. Merch for it's next a, year.
Oh, God.
Firstborn.
Yep, we'll just use this right here. Luke 2:23.
When we get to Passover, that's going to be perfect. You no longer have to put blood on your door, right? You're just going to wear a vinyl preacher t-shirt that says, I'm a firstborn son.
That's it. Well, they offered a sacrifice according to what is stated in the law of the Lord and according to what is stated in the song, 12 Days of Christmas, a pair of turtle doves, or alternatively, two young pigeons. you know, sometimes in a recipe, you got substitutions.
You got
options. There was a man in Jerusalem whose name was Simeon. This man was righteous and devout, looking forward to the consolation of Israel. Interesting phrase. And the Holy Spirit rested on him. It had been revealed to him by the Holy Spirit that he would not see death before he had seen the Lord's Messiah. Guided by the Spirit, Simeon came into the temple. And when the parents brought in the child Jesus to do for him what was customary under the law, Simeon took him in his arms and praised God, saying, Master, you are now dismissing your servant in peace according to your word, for my eyes have seen your salvation, which you have prepared in the presence of all peoples, a light for revelation to the Gentiles and for glory to your people Israel. And the child's father and mother were amazed at what was being said about him. And then Simeon blessed them and said to his mother Mary, this child is destined for the falling and the rising of many in Israel, and to be a sign that will be opposed, so that the inner thoughts of many will be revealed. And a sword will pierce your own soul, too. There was also a prophet, Anna, the daughter of Phanuel of the tribe of Asher. And she was of great age, having lived with her husband 7 years after her marriage, and then as a widow to the age of 84. She never left the temple, but worshipped there with fasting and prayer night and day. At that moment she came and began to praise God and to speak about the child to all who were looking for the redemption of Jerusalem. And when they had finished everything required by the law of the Lord, they returned to Galilee, to their own town of Nazareth. And the child grew and became strong, filled with wisdom, and the favor of God was upon him. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ. Matt, again, I mean, we're hitting some similar themes here, you know, but the big takeaway I would have here is, again, like the shepherds, on our sister podcast, Let's Talk About the Sheep, we've covered many times that shepherds are untrustworthy, the lowest social class, and they were the first people to hear about Jesus. And now we've got some more traditional outsiders. The only folks who could be as reviled as shepherds, or not reviled, the worst person to be would be a widow in the ancient Near East, because nobody else was bound to care about your well-being. And this widow can see who Jesus is. And Simeon, who is so old, Matt, okay, just listen to this. He is so old that everybody else is like, well, must be some sort of act of God keeping him alive. Right? Like, it's not, mm-hmm. I don't think Simeon's been going around saying that, like, oh, I've just, God's going to let me die as long as I see the Messiah. Everybody else is like, he's not going to die until Jesus comes again. And then Jesus comes again. Like that, like people weren't expecting that mm-hmm. to be fulfilled. And like the beginning of one of my favorite shows on Netflix, Norsemen, when they fulfill the Nordic tradition of taking your old people out and making them jump off a cliff so they don't soak up your resources. These are the people who can see clearly. Hey, there you go. People who likely lacked glasses and couldn't see at all. The people who cannot see are the people who can see clearly who Jesus is.
Yeah, it's so, yeah, I love that, the sight metaphors that are here. This is a really good, like, it's not an entirely unfamiliar story, but it is obviously less told than the well-trod territory.
It's a B-side, you know.
Of Christmas Eve, right? Yeah. But it is really, it's got such wonderful imagery here with, yeah, these outsiders in different ways. It's a multi-generational story going on. Mm-hmm. I find that to be so powerful. And then just, yeah, the images. You get the Benedictus here. Did I get that right? That is what it is, isn't it?
I'm going maybe. To affirm you to in order to okay, not good. Reveal my own ignorance.
And then you get this little word from Simeon, which seems pretty frightening to Mary, yeah. But is it's just some powerful imagery. And then, yeah, oh my gosh. And the story of Anna here.
Some pretty killer last words there, too, by the way.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I assume these are his last words.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
There's some decent here. Gender equity here that's maybe worth lifting up.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, you get Simeon and Anna. Mm-hmm. You didn't have to include both of them. You know, it makes the same mm-hmm. kind of point in both of them, but...
yep.
Goes out of the way to include both. That's not everything, but that's something.
Mm-hmm. So, good stuff for the Sunday of Christmas. And if you're Episcopalian, like Zach, you might be preaching John 1.
Or if you're a Lutheran who just is fully dependent on lectionarypage.net to feed you the lectionary for the week, you're going to stumble your way into John 1. Which I don't have a great takes on. I don't love it at Christmas, to tell you the truth. I'd be more likely to preach on Luke because the narrative, the stories there are so much. It is a narrative. But John, you got the trippy opening. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and he was in the beginning with God, and all things came into being through him, and without him not one thing came into being. And what has come into being in him was life. The life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness did not overcome it. Then you get into John, who came to testify to the light. It gets super Johnny. You know, he was in the world, and the world came into being through him, yet the world did not know him. The Word became flesh and lived among us. And we've seen his glory. St. John has his own language, you know. It's like the Mandalorian, you know. There's a vocabulary you need to be versed in. And this text can be super powerful and helpful if you understand the vocabulary that it's using. I'm going to go out on a limb and say the Sunday after Christmas is not the best time to do your academic sermon where you introduce people to the vocabulary, themes, and literary context of John.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a fun fact, so that's something. Maybe we'll get something out of it. Susan Thistlethwaite, who I took a class from in seminary, who's formerly or still is, the president of Chicago Theological Seminary, has written on this and makes the connection, because this is, interestingly, it is the third creation story. We've probably talked about it on the podcast before when we've done Genesis, but there are two creation stories at the beginning of the Bible in Genesis, when God creates everything in 7 days, and then God becomes a potter and makes Adam and Eve out of clay and recreates the things. They're two fairly distinct stories that we put together at the beginning. This is a third creation story that describes the beginning of things. And the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. Susan Thistlethwaite's interesting take on this is that this part of this creation story might be the closest and most congruent with science of all the creation stories. That if you go to the beginning of carbon-based life on Earth, there was some sort of primordial soup when the proteins were swimming together. And once those genetics got in the right order, as you remember from your sixth grade genetics class, the C's, the G's, the A's, the T's, maybe?
Sure.
Got in the right order.
Yes.
Everything came into being.
Gattaca.
Just like the Benedictus. Gattaca. Boom. And that's everything came into being, and nothing came into being throughout without the genetic sequencing. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure these days exactly what it means. I think that's neat. And I like it, you know. I don't think it proves this text or anything, you know. But that it might be a helpful metaphor for what John is using as logos or word here. That it is this connective tissue of the universe. And that would be the good news that I would find myself leading towards. In traditional years, Christmas is a time of experiencing high connectivity and high disconnectivity. Mm-hmm. You know, we're very aware of who we're connected to, and sometimes we don't feel connected to those people. And this year, being physically disconnected sucks. Mm-hmm. And so here's the promise of, even across the cosmos, we are connected in thus word, that is, in, with, and among us. So mm-hmm. That's what I got, man.
Yeah. No, I like that, the connective tissue of the universe. It is, I mean, when we use this text, you know, it's usually to, I mean, at St. Mark's, it's usually to frame the story, right? Because we're going to tell a story. But this gives it like a cosmic framing. And I think what you get at is also like, it's from the cosmic in terms of the stars, but then it's also like the connective tissue of DNA, right? Like, it gives it this framing mm-hmm. of the universe, yeah, which is helpful. It's tough to get too deep into John. I'd almost cut it off earlier than 18, but right. it does give it, like, if you, it works,
especially
as a framing
on Zoom church,
right? Yeah,
oh my God. John is the worst gospel for Zoom church.
yeah, indeed, yeah.
Did he just say that? Is my internet glitch? Yeah, I mean, you could even do everything you can to avoid telling people that we're all made of stardust. But what is it? That you know, human to human, we share like 99.9% of the same DNA, is all the same. Mm-hmm. We share incredibly high rates, percentages of DNA with all of creation, mm-hmm. you know, so.
Yeah. Well, I feel like I started this.
And you probably don't want to go. Yeah. Here's my actual advice for preaching First Sunday to Christmas. It's probably not. Take it easy on yourself. Take it easy on your people. You don't need to go 20,000 leagues under the sea right now, mm-hmm. or right after Christmas, in normal years either, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can have a short good news sermon that works. Mm-hmm. And doesn't.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. So I started to a short sermon that works. So I started this podcast talking about how we should frame it in the context.
You started a new podcast without telling
this me? Podcast, or this, not even the podcast, we had the texts, Christmas in a time of grief, right? Not just for me, but for so many, this year. And so maybe that's, you know, maybe it isn't about like, not maybe, we know it isn't, because we've been on this podcast for a long time and we know we're not going to explain all the things in a sermon, But maybe what we can do is to identify with some of the characters in this story, right? And keep it short in that way. Tread the well-trod territory, but point out the people and what they are experiencing, right? Lift up the connective tissue between these characters in this story and us. And so before I get out of these texts, let me rewind slightly because I feel like I should tie it off since I started.
Yeah, drop the rewind.
Since I started with this framing, here's Anna. Anna was of great age, having lived with her husband 7 years after her marriage, and then as a widow to the age of 84. Now, we could get into social science, right, and think about what we don't know what her marriage was actually like. But here is a person that lived with an empty seat at that table. Here's a person that lived with loss. And that had a lot of different ramifications for her, right? Like, we're going to talk more about economic ramifications of widows in that time. Like, we can go a lot of different directions with that. But maybe for Christmas, we don't need to go that deep. But we can just point out that this is a person who has known loss. And we can point out that Simeon says to Mary that a sword will pierce your own soul too. And to go through these texts and these stories, whether it's these shepherds or whether it's Joseph, whether it's Mary, whether it's the innkeeper, go wherever you want to go with it, but find these characters and see where they connect with us in our time, and leave it there, right? Let it be a narrative. You don't need to explain all the things, but if we can draw some of the connective tissues, Zach, I'm going to use your language, the connective tissue this year, because I think these stories do know what we live through even now in this insane year of 2020. So find that connective tissue and let that just be. How's that? Does that work?
I like it. I'm going to loop back to your Blue Christmas service stuff from earlier in the pod. I understand the practical need to perhaps have a separate service and call it a Blue Christmas because people may not come to your people who would like to go to that maybe. Wouldn't be interested in attending your regular service. But I do worry a little bit about the theology of taking the blue, of the temptation to take the blue out of Christmas and put it over here in its own service. When it certainly seems to be, if your Christmas service doesn't wind its way through those shadowed valleys, then you're probably not doing it right.
Yeah, I think that's right. What you said. Do the blue Christmas for certain reasons, but don't leave the blue out of your Christmas. There you go.
There we go. Well, Matt, you have... You didn't... I don't believe you drove to the village, but you were traveling, Matt, and I can only imagine that when you travel... One thing I know about Matt Cadle is that he's a firstborn male, and that when he travels, he's making playlists. What have you been listening to? What are you listening to? Christmas in the village.
Oh my goodness, I did. I flew into Chicago. And let me tell you, Zach.
Midway?
We flew in the middle of the day because the flights are wide open. So we had our pick. had our pick of flights and seats. And that meant that when we got into Chicago, it was about sunset.
Ooh.
And so the sky is orange. And we are this flight plan. We're coming from the west, but we go out over Lake Michigan. So we overshoot the airport, and then we turn. And as we turn, I'm sitting on the left side of the plane. And so out my window, I can see the skyline of the city of Chicago with the blazing sky behind it. Greatest city in the world.
Greatest city in the world.
Shining bright. And it called out. Called out for a playlist. It was a glorious view, Zach. You would have loved it. As alumni of LSTC, just special love for this city by the lake. What am I listening to? This year, as in so many years, I just always have to lift up Joseph in this story. The Killers, who I believe are going to be on your playlist as well, have a song with Elton John. I should put The Killers featuring Elton John. It's very important. Joseph, Better You Than Me. Just an incredible...
It's a great song.
Over the top, as The Killers always are, but little window into Joseph's possible psyche.
I've not heard that song yet, Matt, but I did order it on vinyl, and I feel like in the next 3 years, I'm going to get it and listen to it.
Incredible. They also have like a Christmas album where they collect a bunch of these holiday singles, and it features like a Joshua tree on the cover with Christmas lights in it, which I just think is awesome.
It is such a bummer. So there's, I mean, I appreciate it. I'm glad because it happened, Matt. Speaking of Christmas grief, from 2006 to 2016, the Killers every year put out a Christmas single. And we've talked about on the podcast, things aren't all simpatico currently with the Killers. But they haven't put one out in 4 or 5 years, and like, it would make me so happy if they did another one. But
I know, right? Mm-hmm. Agreed. Agreed. Well, thinking about Joseph, the father in this story, and thinking about my own dad, we'll do Yusuf Cat Stevens, father and son, which, yes, just go listen to it. You know, it's a good Holy Family kind of song. And a good one for the Simeon and Anna story too, I think, as this Simeon passes on this blessing to this next generation. And then finally, one of the stories that, or one of the albums that my brothers and I have memorized from start to finish, because when we would go on road trips, my dad would listen to it on repeat for hours and hours on end, is Paul Simon's Graceland. But it's a pretty good album. If you're going to have an album memorized, it's a pretty good one. And so just that song, Graceland, would be a pretty good... The way I pictured in the context of these songs is... you know, as this story begins to kick off here in Luke, and as Jesus begins to go down this way, whatever that looks like, it feels like a road trippy kind of song, the beat, the rhythm of it, and where are they going to Graceland? So, Paul Simon, there we go. What are you listening to?
Oh, Matt. While the Killers have taken a hiatus from releasing Christmas songs, I have found a replacement, Matt. Phoebe Bridgers, perhaps my artist of the year, it seems, has actually picked up the tradition, started in 2017, releasing a Christmas single. This year's Christmas song is called If I Make It Through December, which is very true. And yeah, it's real true. And it's very Phoebe Bridgers. I like this song. It actually came out. She did a similar thing to what the Killers did when they put all of their Christmas songs together. There's an EP right now, and there are actually two Christmas songs this year. And I'm going to put the other one on my playlist, which is 7 o'clock news / Silent Night. And in that track, you have Phoebe Bridgers and Fiona Apple duetting Silent Night, while over the top, Matt Berninger of The National reads headlines from current events that are all pretty terrible. And so it is that perfect mix of, I was able to preach this past Sunday, Matt, and, preaching the good news of salvation that comes in a vial on the same day when 3,000 people will die, is what the 7 o'clock news / Silent Night, puts into song. So, speaking of Christmas albums, Matt, and Christmas collections, Chance the Rapper, who, you know, just like us, has spent formative time in Chicago. He just released his first album, like a year ago. But before that, he released a number of mixtapes. And one of the mixtapes he had released was his, he had a Christmas mixtape with Jemiah. Jeremiah, also Chicago-based. Jeremiah, turns out, Matt, got COVID, was in the ICU for a couple weeks in November, is now out of the hospital. He released a mixtape. They released a mixtape together of Christmas, a Christmas album, not an album, a number of years, about 2016 or so, but it was only on a SoundCloud. And then they did another volume, again, only on the SoundCloud. You couldn't find it on Spotify. And this year, they've put it together, re-released it, smushed it together, took some tracks from each of the collections and some new tracks, which also feature Hannibal Buress. which is pretty fun, and it's top two Chance the Rapper albums for me. The whole thing, all of them are great. You should listen to them. They're really good. They're better than his album. And I'm gonna put Stranger at the Table, a Christmas song about being at a table with strangers, but Chance the Rapper and Jeremiah. And last, Matt, like you, we're doing a Christmas episode. I had to go to the Killers. What could I find? And I didn't want to, you know, like I knew this song. I knew Christmas in LA featuring Dawes because it's a great one, right? And it's Dawes. And I'm like, I know myself. I'm going to sit it over here. I bet there's another song they have that's perfect for this year. But no, I had to go back to it, Matt. Another Christmas in LA, waiting, being alone. I mean, Christmas, waiting, being alone, despondent. It's perfect. It's perfect. You can't do anything with it. It's really good.
Yep. It's fantastic. It has some just incredible lines. Another picture of sangria in an empty beach cafe. And he leaves this girl behind. I wonder where she ended up. Maybe she got married, had a couple of kids. Who do you think you're fooling, man? Of course she did.
That's great.
Incredible. Fun fact, the video features Owen Wilson. Worth a watch. It's good. Good stuff.
You can also, right now on Facebook, on Dawes' Facebook page, you can find a video of Taylor playing it acoustically by himself, which is pretty good, too.
That's great. Well,
man.
Good stuff. Merry Christmas to all. And to all the good vinyl. It's been real.
Christmas vinyl.